not a Muslim band, but we were totally prepared. It's working out very nicely.
Oh, yes. Working out very nicely. They are totally prepared.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Might be working out.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
For them.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast as heard on 90.7 FM KPFK in Los Angeles. Up in Oregon on 91.7 FM KYAQ on the Central Coast and 106.7 FM KSO in Cottage Grove. In Lancaster, Pennsylvania on 93 FM WLRI. In Hawaii on 88.5 FM KAKU, the voice of Maui. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN 94.1 FM. Palinville, New York, 102.9 FM WLPP. And in Minneapolis, St. Paul on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We're also heard streaming coast to coast and around the globe on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR Revolution 99, Detour Talk, Radio Monterey, and Radio Sputnik, blanketing planet Earth 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, says me. From bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us today for a far too thrilling, far too action-packed adventure that we call the Bradcast, as protests at airports and elsewhere around the country in response to Donald Trump's late Friday executive order banning immigration and otherwise unlawful travel from seven majority Muslim countries continues at this hour. The order, which came as we finished up Friday's show, it has been reverberating across the nation and the world ever since. It began by invoking 9-11. It invoked 9-11 three times, this executive order did. Of course, the 9-11 hijackers were from Egypt, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, and Lebanon. None of those countries are included in this executive order ban that happened on Friday. So this ban said to be necessary because of 9-11. None of the home countries of the 9-11 hijackers are included. Moreover, none of the terror attacks or attempted terror attacks in the U.S. since 9-11 and including 9-11 were actually carried out by foreign nationals or those who were born or even visited any of the countries listed in this ban. None of the, for example, none of the perpetrators of the Orlando or San Bernardino massacres or the Boston Marathon attacks, none of them were from or had traveled to any of the countries covered by Trump's executive order. So now here we are as an unknown number of permanent U.S. residents and many others already approved for lawful visas are either being detained in airports without access to attorneys or are otherwise being sent away or kept from traveling here at all by airports around the world. The hypocrisy and the lawlessness of Trump's order, frankly, is far more disturbing than it even initially appears on a whole bunch of levels. I'll try to get to some of those levels here today and with my guest shortly. Whose organization has just filed a federal lawsuit, the largest federal lawsuit to date, just hours ago in Washington, D.C., on Monday, in hopes of blocking the entire executive order. In the meantime, just one of the reasons that all of this is much worse than it even appears so far, it was documented by Betsy Woodruff at the Daily Beast. Late on Sunday night, let me read from this. She says, Customs and Border Protection, that's CBP, the federal agency tasked with keeping people from entering the U.S. illegally, successfully deflected a federal judge's court order on Sunday and stonewalled three members of Congress in a display of executive branch muscle. The night before, on Saturday, Judge Leonie Brinkema ordered CBP officials at the airport to let lawyers have access to legal permanent residents of the U.S. who were detained because of Trump's travel ban. It was a court order from a federal judge, which meant it was enforceable by federal law enforcement. But immigration lawyers at Dulles International Airport in Washington, D.C. said it did not get adequately enforced at the airport. And instead, the CBP kept the detainees at Dulles for unspecified period of time, and it still is not public how many lawful American residents were held there and for how long, and kept from having face-to-face conversations with attorneys. Instead, immigration attorneys told the Daily Beast that they had learned detainees were provided with a copy of Judge Brinkema's order and a paper listing contact information for pro bono immigration attorneys based in Northern Virginia. That even while we had all of these attorneys at the airport ready to speak with these people. It isn't clear if those attorneys in Northern Virginia that they were referred to were even on call on Sunday. It isn't clear if all the detainees had access to phones while they were being held. And it isn't clear why CBP barred the numerous volunteer immigration attorneys that were on hand at the airports from talking to the talking in person with the people being held. The need for attorneys has obviously been urgent. Slate reported that at least two of the detainees, a 19-year-old and a 21-year-old, both citizens of Yemen, signed away their green cards while they were in detention without access to attorneys. It was the worst nightmare, Daily Beast says, for the volunteer lawyers at Dulles. The CBP would be able to nab a public relations win by releasing detainees, but without the public realizing that the agency may have bullied some of those detainees into ceding their rights to live in the U.S. Brinkema's order, the judge's order in this particular case was just a few lines long. It directed CBP to, quote, permit lawyers access to all legal permanent residents being detained at Dulles International Airport. Some of the attorneys at the airport want CBP to be held in contempt of court. Hassan Ahmad, an immigration attorney at the airport with the HMA law firm in McLean, Virginia, said, "We still haven't talked to a client, and that is proving serious constitutional problems for access to counsel. Rights are being violated." Officials with the CBP were quarantined away from the public the entire time that Betsy Woodruff says she was at Dulles. She was there for a whole bunch of hours on Saturday and on Sunday. Lawyers and police officers said the officials were squirreled away in a room down a hall blocked off by police. When Senator Cory Booker, U.S. Senator, visited Dulles on Saturday night, he got past the police and down the hall, but a well-placed source told the Daily Beast that the officials refused to see him. The officials from CBP refused to see him, instead passing notes back and forth about their understanding of the judge's order. Three Democratic members of Congress all tried to get police officers to let them go back and talk to the officials. An interchange was caught on video over at Huffington Post, which reports the virtually unprecedented sight of members of the legislative branch of the U.S. government trying with little success to enforce orders from the judicial branch against the will of the executive branch, and which has already prompted some to suggest that Trump's executive order is sparking a constitutional crisis. The members did not get to talk to anyone from the agency at Dulles, and the lawyers didn't talk to anyone who was being detained. The agency had gone to extraordinary lengths to stiff-arm attorneys, according to Brian Murray, an immigration attorney based in Fairfax, Virginia. He added that the attorneys looking to get CBP held in contempt could have trouble making the case in court if the agency blocks them from learning the names of the people who were being detained, and thus being detained without rights to an attorney. It is so effed up, he said. Except he didn't say effed. Yeah, really effed up.
This is extremely effed up. This is incredibly chilling that law enforcement will defy the judicial branch orders on behalf of the executive branch. I mean, the Department of Homeland Security, you know, they've got broad jurisdiction over pretty much all of our lives. And to have them potentially be turned toward a tool of the administration against Americans and legal American residents is very chilling.
This is
I don't know where
beyond
this goes.
Chilling. Nobody knows where it goes. I guess this is what it looks like when America is great again. On Sunday, just 2 days after being sworn in, 45% of respondents in a daily tracking poll by Gallup, 45% of respondents said they disapproved of Trump's job performance and 45% approved. That was 2 days after he was sworn in. By Friday, just 5 days later, the percentage who disapproved of Donald Trump rose to 50%, and the percentage who approved dipped to 42%. And I should note that was by Friday, an 8-point drop in his first week in office on Friday before this executive order came out. He is now at 42% approval rating, an historic low for an incoming president like this, according to this Gallup survey. Of course, we covered other surveys who found similar numbers. Quinnipiac survey last Thursday, again before the order, said that 45% of respondents disapproved of his handling of the presidency thus far. Only 36% in that poll approved of what Donald Trump was doing. But you know who does approve of what Donald Trump is doing? According to the Washington Post, jihadist groups on Sunday celebrated the Trump's administration ban on travel from seven Muslim-majority countries, saying the new policy validates their claim that the U.S. is at war with Islam. Comments posted to pro-Islamic State, pro-ISIS social media accounts predicted that Trump's executive order would persuade American Muslims to side with the extremists. One posting hailed the U.S. president as, quote, the best caller to Islam. While others predicted that Trump would soon launch a new war in the Middle East. Islamic State leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, quote, has the right to come out and inform Trump that banning Muslims from entering America is a blessed ban, said one posting to a pro-ISIS channel on Telegram. The writer compared the executive order to the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003, which Islamic militant leaders at the time hailed as a blessed invasion that ignited anti-Western fervor across the Islamic world. Several postings also suggested that Trump was fulfilling the predictions of Anwar al-Awlaki, the American-born al-Qaeda leader and preacher who famously said that the West would eventually turn against its Muslim citizens. Al-Awlaki was killed in a U.S. drone strike in Yemen in 2011. Another poster beneath the banner of Al-Awlaki and his quote about the West would eventually turn against this Muslim citizen said, when U.S. President Donald Trump says we don't want them here and bans the Muslim immigrants from Muslim countries, there is one thing that comes to our mind, citing the Al-Awlaki quote. Another posting on Telegram, this same channel, said that Trump's actions clearly revealed the truth and harsh reality behind the American government's hatred towards Muslims. Unbelievable. this is exactly, Donald Trump is fulfilling the dreams of the jihadists.
He's also fulfilling
the dreams of ISIS.
He's also fulfilling the dreams of Osama bin Laden. Remember when bin Laden said all those years ago before perpetrating 9/11 that his goal was to get the United States to turn upon itself and rip itself apart from the inside?
Hey, we're doing great in that regard, aren't
we? Good job.
Robert Richer, a 35-year CIA veteran and former chief of the agency's Near East Division, said that this ban was, quote, a tragic mistake that could undermine future efforts to recruit spies and collect vital information about terrorists and their plans. How, he asks, can CIA officers persuade Iraqi and Syrian nationals to risk their lives to help the United States? This was a win for jihadists and other anti-U.S. forces. said Richer. He was the deputy chief of the agency's operations directorate during the George W. Bush administration. He says this fuels the belief out there that Americans are anti-Islam. Otherwise, it accomplishes nothing because the ones we are most concerned about can still get into the U.S. And yes, the one of the first lawsuits that was filed in this case against two detainees at JFK, one of them had been working with the U.S. as a translator for going back to 2003 during the worst part, during the initial invasion of Iraq, during all of the years since. He has been working for 2 years to get clearance to come to the U.S. He had all of his papers in order. He was approved under the visa program, and he was one of the people being detained at JFK on Saturday. Another one was a man whose family had been targeted in Iraq with car bombs. And now, luckily, those two detainees were eventually released after a court order was obtained, but others were sent back before that court order came in. Others were stopped from traveling. People who had legal, legitimate visas that they had been working on, that they had been getting for years, that they had been vetted for years. They were turned back by this madness. U.S. judges in at least five different states so far have now blocked federal authorities from enforcing at least parts of Trump's executive order. Judges in California, Massachusetts, Virginia, and Washington State, each home to international airports, each of those judges issued their rulings after a similar order was issued on Saturday night by U.S. District Judge Ann Donnelly in New York's Brooklyn borough. None of the rulings, however, struck down Friday's executive order by the new Republican president. Basically, all they did was said, some said, oh, you can't send them back. You can detain them, but you can't send them back. Or you can detain them. Or you can't send them back. You can't detain them. But they still will not be approved for moving here as they had been allowed to, according to their papers, for so many years. There's questions about the constitutionality of the entire order, according to Andrew Pincus, an attorney from Meyer Brown, representing two Yemeni men who were detained. And who were actually denied U.S. entry from an overseas flight despite being legal permanent residents of the U.S. People have gone through the process to obtain legal permanent resident status or visas, Pincus said. There are serious questions about whether those rights, which are created by statute, can unilaterally be taken away by a president with an executive order. Attorneys general from 15 different states, California, New York, 13 other states, and Washington, D.C., said in a statement that they condemned this executive order, pledged to fight what they called Trump's dangerous and unconstitutional order. An unconstitutional order about which there has been for the last 3 days now utter confusion, utter chaos. And I guess some would order that was by design. I don't know if that was by design or that was just the ineptitude of this particular White House, which apparently did not run any of this through the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Defense, the Department of State, DHS, and the State Department saw this just before it was signed into law. Well, I don't even want to say into law, just before the executive order was signed by Donald Trump. So no one was prepared. The Border Patrol did not see this. It wasn't until Friday, the day that Trump signed the order, that career Homeland Security staff were actually allowed to see the final details of the order, according to CNN. And so you had widespread confusion everywhere. We still have it today. It's unclear whether this law does or does not apply to people who have permanent resident status here, who have green cards. I mentioned the two Yemenis who were detained at JFK in Philadelphia, a Syrian family of six who had a visa through a family connection in the U.S. They were placed on a return flight to Doha, Qatar. And DHS officials said that others were in the air who were in the air at the time would be detained upon arrival, put back on planes to their home country. And yet, Donald Trump, when asked about this on Saturday, as these protests were growing around the country, said that the government was totally prepared for this. Everything was working out very, very nicely.
It's not a Muslim ban, but we were totally prepared. It's working out very nicely. You see it at the airports. You see it all over. It's working out very nicely. And we're going to have a very, very strict ban, and we're going to have extreme vetting, which we should have had in this country for many years.
Delusional. That is delusional.
It's delusional, and it is now the policy of the United States of America. Apparently, the disagreement, by the way, about the green cards and you know, whether people who had green cards were permanent residents, there was confusion about whether this order applied to them or not. Homeland Security Department originally said it did not, but that was overruled by the White House itself. The order came from the president's inner circle, Stephen Miller and Steve Bannon, overruled their own Department of Homeland Security. And put out a statement that was in contradiction with what the Department of Homeland Security had told airports on Friday night. Before the president issued the order, the White House did not seek the legal guidance of the Office of Legal Counsel, according to CNN. That would be the Justice Department office that interprets the law for the executive branch. The White House now disputes that and says, yes, OLC did sign off on that. Well, we will see if that was true or not. A source said the creation of the executive order did not follow the standard agency review process that typically oversees this sort of thing, that is typically overseen by the National Security Council, which now has had Stephen Bannon, the publisher of Breitbart, now added to the National Security Council, which has deprecated the Joint Chiefs of Staff who would normally run the National Security Council. Instead, we've got a wingnut blogger now running the National Security Council and giving orders and overriding the Department of Homeland Security. It's madness. It's insane. It's also illegal. We've got now information that diplomats all over the world, apparently there is a procedure that has been set up since the Vietnam War that allows diplomats and foreign service officers to issue complaints, to go around their boss and basically issue complaints. And now dozens of foreign service officers and other career diplomats around the world are so concerned about the new executive order that they are considering taking this rare step. And the draft copy of this memo that they are planning to send says this ban will not achieve its stated aim to protect the American people from terrorist attacks by foreign nationals admitted to the U.S., given the near absence of terror attacks committed in recent years by visa holders from Syria, Iraq, Yemen, Somalia, Iran, Libya, or Sudan, this ban will have little practical effect in improving public safety, according to these diplomats. In fact, the executive order, quote, calls back to some of the worst times in our history, such as the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II. Decades from now, they write, we will look back and realize we made the same mistakes. In the meantime, it's not just courts. It's not just Democratic members of Congress. There's also a very few Republican members of Congress who are coming out against this policy, including John McCain and Lindsey Graham. who said that the executive order sends a signal that America does not want Muslims coming into our country. That is why we fear this executive order may do more to help terrorist recruitment than improve our security, they wrote in their statement. So it's not just courts. It's not just Democratic members of Congress. It's not just some Republican members of Congress. It's not just diplomats around the world. It's also the Cato Institute, the right-wing Cato Institute, who says President Trump signed an executive order on Friday that purports to bar for at least 90 days almost all permanent immigration from seven majority Muslim countries, including Syria and Iraq. But the order is illegal, writes David Beyer in the New York Times. David Beyer of the Cato Institute. The order is illegal. More than 50 years ago, Congress outlawed such discrimination against immigrants based on national origin. Mr. Trump appears to want to reinstate by executive order what a new type of what they describe the Asiatic barred zone. The immigration, but there is one problem, he writes. The Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965 banned all discrimination against immigrants on the basis of national origin, replacing the old prejudicial system and giving each country an equal shot at the quotas. In signing the new law, President Lyndon B. Johnson said that the, quote, harsh injustice of the national origins quoted system had been abolished. Nonetheless, writes Beyer, Mr. Trump asserts that he still has the power to discriminate. He points to a 1952 law that allows the president the ability to suspend the entry of any class of aliens that he finds are detrimental to the interests of the U.S., but the president ignores the fact that Congress then restricted that power in 1965, stating plainly that no person could be, quote, discriminated against in the issuance of an immigrant visa because of the person's race, sex, nationality, place of birth, or residence. And that's exactly now what the Council on American Islamic Relations is charging that this law does. Violates the law, violates the Constitution. And they have now filed a lawsuit to completely strike down this appalling, offensive executive order that was issued Friday by Donald Trump. We will speak with Lena Masri of the Council on American Islamic Relations about this lawsuit just filed hours ago. Next on the broadcast, I'm Brad Friedman. Don't go away. All right, welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com on another very dark day. The Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, filed a lawsuit Monday just hours ago in federal court in Alexandria, Virginia, challenging Donald Trump's executive order restricting citizens of seven Muslim-majority countries from traveling to the U.S., claiming that that executive order is essentially unlawful and unconstitutional. The lawsuit characterizes the ban as an unconstitutional first step in fulfilling Trump's campaign promise to impose, quote, a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States because it, quote, favored and disfavored groups based on their faith. It is, as the Daily Beast describes it today, the biggest lawsuit yet filed against Donald Trump's immigration order. The suit against Trump, Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly, the Department of State, and the Director of National Intelligence names more than 20 plaintiffs, a dozen of whom are identified only as John or Jane Doe because of the precariousness of their legal position. It refers to Trump's order, officially known as Protecting the Nation from Terrorist Attacks by Foreign Nationals, as the Muslim Exclusion Order throughout the case. Here's how it starts. The very first paragraph. The vulgar animosity that accounts for the existence of executive order entitled Protecting the Nation from Terrorist Attacks by Foreign Nationals is plain to see, and the absence of the words Islam or Muslim does nothing to obscure it. In fact, the executive order has already gained national attention and media attention and nationwide protest and has been dubbed uniformly as the Muslim ban because its apparent and true purpose and underlying motive is to ban Muslims from certain Muslim-majority countries, including Iraq, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen, and has been broadcast to the general public by the Trump administration. Less known, the suit notes, is the second and equally central purpose of the Muslim exclusion order to initiate the mass expulsion of immigrants and non-immigrant Muslims lawfully residing in the U.S. by denying them the ability to renew their lawful status or receive immigration benefits afforded to them under the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965, based solely on their religious beliefs. Many Muslims lawfully in the United States are targeted by the Muslim exclusion order, including some of the John Doe and John Doe plaintiffs, will be forced as a result of the Muslim exclusion order to return to their home countries, where they will likely face persecution, torture, and even execution simply because they are Muslim. Boy, here to join us to talk about this now is Lena Masri. She is a Muslim civil rights attorney and human rights activist and the National Litigation Director and Acting Civil Rights Director at the Council on American Relations, or CARE, who has filed this lawsuit just hours ago. She previously served as legal director of CARE's chapter in Michigan, and in her own law practice, she specializes in immigration and political asylum. Lena Masri, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here on, I suspect, what must be a very difficult day for you and your organization and Muslims, not just in this country, but worldwide. Let me jump into the case here, Lena. You've got two different groups of plaintiffs. Some are named, some are not. Can you give me just a general idea of who these people are? Who are the plaintiffs? And why are some of them named and others not nameable at this time?
So we have two sets of plaintiffs in this lawsuit, the Jane and John Doe's, whose names are concealed, and those are the people that are directly targeted by this Muslim exclusion order. You're talking about green card holders. We have some students that are going to be unable to renew their student visas and eventually forced out of the country once they lose their status. We're talking about asylees who fled their home countries from persecution, torture, and potential execution. That are listed on here, and among other different types of statuses. One for John Doe's is an American citizen who has a dual nationality in Syria. And, you know, as a result, all of these people, once they exit the country, although they have lawful status right now in the United States, once they exit, they're not going to be allowed back in. And because of their, you know, they're obviously afraid of retaliation, of, you know, having a possible revocation of their status as a result of standing up and opposing Trump's Muslim exclusion order. We've concealed their identities for their own safety. The other set of plaintiffs are American citizen Muslims who have been also targeted by this Muslim exclusion order, in the sense that President Trump has issued a broad-scale condemnation of Islam as a religion, which, you know, is a very basic violation of the First Amendment to the United States, the most important amendment that we have, where the government cannot prefer or condemn one religion over another. And as American Muslims, we have all been violated. We've all had our constitutional rights violated by that condemnation that was broadcast to the general public.
Let me play the devil's advocate, or in this case, Trump's advocate here. He says that they are not targeting Muslims, that they're just targeting people from certain countries. How, focusing for the moment on the U.S. citizens that are named as plaintiffs in your suit, how are their rights specifically being violated by this order, or even by language that the administration is using, as you see it?
Well, the thing here that's really important to note, yes, we're talking about only seven countries. And by the way, after 90 days, we know that additional countries are going to be named as well. But these countries that were named are all Muslim majority countries, and the order essentially provides a way for non-Muslims to enter under the executive order and not Muslims, and that is by claiming religious persecution. So just to highlight what I'm talking about, an example, if there is a Syrian Christian green card holder and a Syrian Muslim green card holder, let's say they're both lawfully living in the United States together, they travel abroad, they both try to re-enter, the customs officer initially is going to tell both of them, you cannot come in because you're Syrian. When the Syrian Christian says, yes, but I'm fleeing from religious persecution, he enters. The Muslim says, I'm fleeing from religious persecution, he does not enter. And that's the reason why this executive order very clearly targets the Muslim community. There is no way under this executive order that a Muslim can enter the country.
There has been, of course, utter confusion, frankly, about the order since it was issued a few days ago, even among the administration and the federal agencies that are supposed to be enforcing it. But you mentioned the political asylum for religious purposes, those who have been religiously persecuted in their own countries. And there's this supposed exclusion that you cite, you know, if they come from a minority religion in their country. How does CARE actually interpret that? And for example, would that apply to Shia Muslims versus Sunni Muslims, you know, in a Sunni majority country? Could that interpretation be used here, or has the administration made clear, no, Muslim is Muslim, and that's that?
Well, you know, a couple of things here. One is that Sunnis and Shias are two different sects of the same religion.
Mm-hmm.
The language in the executive order specifically pertains to religion, and not it doesn't offer sects to claim persecution based on being a minority sect. It says minority religion.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, we have to look at the broader context, and that is that Trump and his own representatives, Giuliani recently came out and said that Trump specifically asked him to look into a way to make a Muslim ban appear legal. So there's been a lot of talk by the Trump administration, the Trump team, that their intent was to create a Muslim ban, and the result was not just a Muslim ban, but actually a full-scale exclusion order that's going to initiate the expulsion of Muslims that are lawfully residing in the United States.
Let me talk about just some of the plaintiffs. One of them, I understand, just by way, so the people understand, because I think the people, you know, it's easy to look at this and say, oh, it's a Muslim ban, or this affects this group of people, but they don't really understand the very specific individuals we're talking about. For example, one of them in your complaint is a critical care physician serving an underserviced area in the U.S. He's a permanent, I think it's a he, is a permanent U.S. resident of Syrian origin, but out of the country currently, and there's a concern that this physician will not be allowed back in, a physician who's been living here and working here for years now?
Yes, so under the order, any green card holder that leaves the country, as long as he has a nationality in one of those seven Muslim-majority countries, if he leaves the United States, even for a brief vacation, even if he just crosses the border to Canada, he is no longer allowed to re-enter. So now you're talking about a whole population of people that lost their position. People are going, Americans, us as Americans, we are going to lose access to physicians, to nurses, to educators, to engineers, to people across, professionals across civil society, because they are Muslim. So this impacts us all as Americans, and that is the reason why this order is so dangerous and why, as Americans, we need to stand up and oppose this order.
Lena Masri, National Litigation Director for the Council on American Islamic Relations. There were a number of federal judges over the weekend, all of whom came out in favor of the plaintiffs right now, complaining about this order. Many of them, a number of the federal judges said that this should not be applied to green card holders. You know, in other words, people who have lawfully either been here or lawfully received visas. Do you get? And yet we've also been getting reports that agency officials, customs agents have not been have been ignoring some of these federal orders. Can you confirm that? Have you heard from any of these plaintiffs or any of the people that you work with that the federal agents are not following the federal court orders that have been issued in the past, 24 to 72 hours at this point?
So, you know, as you noted, federal judges were actually 5 of 5 ruled that this is unconstitutional. This order is unconstitutional. With regards to people that are in transit and people that are being detained in the airports, from what I saw is even if there are some agents that are refusing to implement the executive order, the Customs and Border Protection and Department of Homeland Security issued statements that they are intending to comply with the executive order, which is, you know, it highlights the reason why we need, why we filed this lawsuit and why we're asking the court to declare the entire order unconstitutional. So it's not just a matter of one or two agents on whether they're going to be applying it or not.
And before I ask you, Lena, about the status of the case and how quickly you expect it to be heard here, we've had some reports that some who have been detained at these airports were freed to go, but only after they agreed to sign away their residency, their green card rights, essentially. Have you heard that as well from any of your clients or people with CARE?
I have, yes. We've seen this as a large-scale issue, and we're advising that nobody sign away any rights. People that whose status are in jeopardy need to consult with an immigration attorney as soon as possible so that we can take steps to secure your rights.
And they were doing, some of these people were not allowed to have counsel at all, even though a lot of attorneys have been available at the airports, and they signed away these rights, as we've heard, without even being allowed to consult an attorney, all of which is very disturbing, to be frank. Where does this case stand now? How quickly do you expect it will be heard? And at this point, what are you asking for? To basically just nullify the entire executive order? And would that be permanently? Or just get a stay on it for now until, as Donald Trump would say, we can figure out what the hell is going on?
No, we are prioritizing this. We're going to be requesting the entire executive order be stricken as unconstitutional, and that is on a permanent basis. And in doing that, we would also be requesting the court to, this is essentially creating precedent to make sure that it's not just this order that mm-hmm. we're striking as unconstitutional, but we need to ensure that this does not happen again.
There are many who oppose Trump's executive order who seem to think there nonetheless needs to be improvements to our immigration and visa application processes. Does CARE agree with that assessment? In other words, are there changes that could be made or could have been made to our current processes that might increase security but not be challenged by your organization? Is it the fact that they're doing this at all, or is it the way they have done this, Lena?
Well, I mean, we as a country vet immigrants and refugees more than any other country in the entire world. The people that are admitted into the United States already go through extreme vetting. This narrative that the Trump administration is putting forward that we need to start vetting immigrants, for national security purposes, and let me backtrack. He doesn't say vetting because that presumes people are admitted. He says he wants to block immigrants coming from certain religious-based backgrounds. That narrative does not do anything to protect our country. It does not provide us with national security whatsoever. The vetting process is already there. As with every man-made policy, everything can always be strengthened, and that is fine. But the moment you cross the line and target religious-based groups, this is a blatant violation of the U.S. Constitution and doesn't make our country any safer.
We reported earlier today that comments posted to pro-Islamic State social media accounts, pro-ISIS accounts, predicted that Trump's executive order would persuade American Muslims to side with the extremists. ISIS apparently is celebrating this order, Lena. That said, what of that claim that they believe that the order will persuade American Muslims to side with extremists? Is that a concern that CARE shares?
It's not a concern that I share. What I'm concerned about is when the president of a country such as the United States, a superpower in the world, comes out and says, I'm condemning one religion over another, doesn't that also set an example to ISIS and to other extremists to take a similar position? That is not in our national interest.
Lena, last question here. Over the weekend, the ACLU had reported that they had received a record number of donations, millions of dollars more than they generally receive, apparently, in an entire year. Are you seeing a similar uptick in support there at CARE? And what can people do right now to help your important work here?
We are seeing an uptick, definitely. I can't comment specifically as to how much because that is not the department that I'm involved in.
Mm-hmm.
But we do, we're always open to donations and support so that we can continue the work that we're doing.
Lena, thanks for joining us. Lena Masri, she is the National Litigation Director for the Council on American-Islamic Relations. You can get more information on them at care.com. And you can find Lena's work on her own at lenamasri.com. Lena, really appreciate you talking to us today, and I hope you don't mind that we're probably going to continue bothering you in the days and months ahead as this madness moves forward.
Oh, please do. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Lena. All right, we got to get out. Quick break here. We're running late. We'll be back with more. I'm Brad Friedman. This is the Bradcast. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. This just breaking when we took a break here, so I'm reading it with you here. Acting Attorney General orders Justice Department not to defend refugee ban. Acting Attorney General Sally Yates, a holdover from the Obama administration, ordered the Justice Department on Monday not to defend President Trump's executive order on immigration in court. She writes, I am responsible for ensuring that the positions we take in court remain consistent with the institution's solemn obligation to always seek justice and stand for what is right, Ms. Yates wrote in a letter to Justice Department lawyers. At present, I am not convinced that the defense of the executive order is consistent with these responsibilities, nor am I convinced that the executive order is lawful. Wow.
Well, I wonder how much longer she'll be in that job.
Well, exactly. They go on to say the decision is largely symbolic. Trump's nominee to be Attorney General Jeff Sessions is likely to be confirmed soon, but I sure as hell hope that every goddamn Democrat in the U.S. Senate votes against him. New York Times says this highlights the deep divide at the Justice Department and elsewhere in the government over Trump's order. Trump has the authority to fire Yates. Maybe she'll be fired by the time we finish this today's broadcast.
The way things are going, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yep. Trump has the authority to fire her, but as the top Senate-confirmed official at the Justice Department, she is the only one authorized to sign foreign surveillance warrants, an essential function at the department. So if she is fired, those cannot be signed. She writes, for as long as I am the acting attorney general, the Department of Justice will not present arguments in defense of the executive order unless and until I become convinced that it is appropriate to do so.
Good luck, Sally Yates.
Wow, yeah. Talk about your constitutional crisis.
Yep.
Man, and, you know, this, reading some of these stories, and I'd hoped to get to them, I wasn't able to, but, I got time for just one here. While there were no official accounts on the number of people impacted who were traveling when the ban took effect, the impact on those temporarily outside the country is likely exponentially larger. The stay does not apply to them. The stay they're talking here, this is The Intercept talking about the court order on Friday, the stay on sending people back to their home country. The stay does not apply to them, those people who happened to be outside of the country temporarily. It's unclear how many people were stranded outside the country after their visas and green cards were suddenly revoked, as Lena Masri was talking about. For example, a Texas resident named Stephanie Felton, who contacted The Intercept, said that her sister-in-law, an Iranian green card holder who has lived in Chicago for over a decade, was stranded in Iran after traveling there last week to visit family. With her in Iran is her 3-year-old daughter, who's an American citizen, who now has no way to return to the U.S. with her mother. Iran, in the meantime, has promised a reciprocal ban on American citizens traveling there, effectively making it impossible for the child to see her father or the rest of her family. Nobody is providing any answers right now, Felton told The Intercept. My family have become refugees from my country. It should be noted here, it is not only Muslims who are actually affected by this ban. The Trump's program brings a halt to programs that would bring Jews and Christian and Baha'i refugees from Iran. Under a 27-year-old program originally approved by Congress to help Jews in the Soviet Union, Austria had been serving until recently as a conduit for Iranian Jews, Christians, and Baha'i who are at risk in their home country and eligible to resettle in the United States. But now it's unclear whether those people will be able to travel, to the U.S. The Austrian airport has shut its doors to about 300 non-Muslim Iranians, hoping to use the country as a way station before coming to the United States. So that was blocked. And Jim Sciutto of CNN's chief national security correspondent said just an hour or two ago on Twitter, just in, Israel seeking clarity on Trump travel ban, 145,000 Jews born in 7 countries listed in the executive order, including 54,000 in Iraq and 45,000 in Iran, may not be able to travel here from Israel. So that's happening as well. I mean, this is just utter. This is utter chaos. This is perhaps what, well, if not Donald Trump, then you know his top guy Steve Bannon may want more chaos than anyone can deal with, than the media can deal with, than the people can deal with, than the citizenry can deal with,
and the judicial system,
and the judicial system, and the Department of Justice.
Chaos is what he does.
What are we protesting today? I mean, that's what it has now. That's what it has now come down to. And by the way, do I have time? Yeah, I have just 1 minute for this. California. We talked on Friday's show about the fact that there's actually an effort now that is officially underway that has been approved by the California Secretary of State to begin collecting signatures to put on the ballot in 2018, a move that would declare independence for the state of California. This could go on to the ballot and a process that actually could move forward. The state of California is studying ways to suspend financial transfers to Washington, D.C. after the Trump administration threatened to withhold federal money from sanctuary cities, according to the CBS affiliate up in Sacramento. Officials are looking for money that flows through Sacramento to the federal government that could be used to offset the potential loss of billions of dollars worth of federal funds if Trump makes good on his threat Whether it's legal or not, that doesn't seem to matter. Makes good on his threat to punish cities and states that don't cooperate with federal agents concerning undocumented immigrants, turning information to turn over undocumented immigrants to the federal government. Senior government source in Sacramento told that to KPIX 5 on Friday, I think this was, or over the weekend. These federal funds pay for a variety of state and local programs, from law enforcement to homeless shelters. California could very well become an organized non-payer, said Willie Brown Jr., former Speaker of the State Assembly, in an interview recorded Friday. They could recommend non-compliance with the federal tax code. So we could have a state, the largest state in the union, the sixth largest economy in the country, in the world, actively defying the federal government. We pay more money to the federal government than any other state.
Right. And we pay more into the federal government and we get less back. Other states get more back from the federal government in proportion to what they send.
Well, that may end soon. We may have another war between the states, or at least a war between a state and the federal government. That sure as hell seems like where we're headed. And we are barely into week two of the Donald Trump presidency. Unbelievable. What will all of this bring tomorrow? I don't know. Stay tuned. We'll be here. My thanks to our producer. My thanks to my producer, Desi Doyen, to Lena Masri of the Council on American Islamic Relations, and to you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It is greatly appreciated. If you missed any portion of today's show, you can download it for free anytime at bradblog.com. And we remain indebted to those of you who stopped by bradblog.com/donate to help us continue doing what we do in our 13th year of doing it. Whatever it is, we just passed our 12th anniversary. So thanks to those of you who support us. You can drop me an email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And you can find me on the Facebooks and the Twitters, where I hope you will find us, follow us, and share us far and wide. Find us at The Brad Blog. All right, that's it. Until we meet again, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.